Madam Mayor, yeah. I'd like to propose just a brief recess for allow people to leave if they want, namely some directors that don't need to be here if they don't want to.
Okay, I think the next item will go fast.
Yeah, why don't we go to the next item?
Yeah. Okay. I think we can, Assembly, can you hang in there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Item 11B, we have people to speak on this, but I think their comments may be shortened because of the announcement that the borough manager may make. So, item B, ordinance number 1057 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending section 14.05.025, general mortgage conditions and restrictions of Title 14, harbor and port facilities of the Wrangell Municipal Code, and to add a new subsection requiring marine vessel insurance, or alternately to require users to pay a mortgage surcharge. I am going to open up the public hearing and request an administrative report from the borough manager.
So Harbor Master and I have taken a really deep look at vessel insurance. We've listened to a lot of public testimony. We've talked with a lot of residents. I know the Assembly has too. And I think Mr. Guggenbeckler tonight hit it on the head. It's not a great time for people to put on additional add-on fees and insurance. And additionally, the burden that it would place on the Harbor Department, I don't see how they would even administer or execute this ordinance as written. So I'm going to recommend to the Assembly that you postpone this indefinitely. It's been wavered back and forth from the Port Commission for years. I don't think this is a great fit for Wrangell. $80,000 what we spent the last 3 years on derelict vessel disposal. That's, in my mind, a cost of business and something that we can address through our operating income at the harbor. And I want to thank the Port Commission for their work and patience with me and the Assembly going through various iterations. Mm-hmm. What I would say is I would like to kick back the maneuverability assessment back to the Port Commission and have them bring that forward, because I think that's a good aspect of this.
Yes.
But I would like to propose postponing this indefinitely, meaning killing it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask for public testimony. I have a few people who've been patiently waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll ask if they still want to speak to it, yeah. But they've been waiting. Stephanie McGinn?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'll speak very briefly.
Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you, Assembly, for the information. And I guess this has kind of changed the tenor a little bit in terms of what we wanted to say. I'm Stephanie McGinn with Stick Built Homes, and we were hoping to to impress upon you our desire to have you defer this discussion. So it sounds like that's going to happen. So we would just like to offer our support for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next on the list, John Stewart.
So I'm new to town and still trying to get a feel for the direction things are headed around here. But as far as the harbor goes, I guess this is going to be postponed. However, I did have some thoughts on this. I don't currently have a boat in the harbor here, but I've been a harbor user up and down the coast for more than 50 years. And I don't know, how many slips do you have?
Harbor Master Miller?
550.
So If in order to cover something like an expensive sinking or something of that issue, you've got to have that somewhere to take care of that. This will be unpopular with some current boat owners around here, I'm sure. But if you were to put $5 per month per slip, you would have over $30,000 in a year. And if you take your worst year or so of what it costs to take care of a problem like that, and then say you fund that at two or three times that, you're going to end up with an excess in fairly short order. I'm assuming that your harbors are an enterprise fund, that could be then directed to first to harbor maintenance or what have you, or matching grants and so on. I know you didn't ask for my opinion, but I didn't really have one. And then to offset the likelihood of something like this happening is you have a boat moored in your harbor, you have proof of maintenance. And you know that, I mean, I've had a lot of boats over the years, and you know, you should be hauling that boat every year. And if you don't haul it every year, at least have proof of maintenance every other year. What this would do, instead of requiring people to carry another, you know, layer and flavor of insurance, that's spinning money out of the community. If this would keep it in the community in the first place, and if you get proof of insurance from someone, how are you going to monitor that over the year? And how is that administered? Are they listing the city as an also insured? So on and so forth. There's a lot of moving parts to that. The other way that I'm suggesting would be, I believe, much easier to administer. Another thing about maneuvering tests. I've seen that in play in Ketchikan for quite a few years. And it's a nice charade, I guess, you know, it's entertaining for some. But in all the years around here, I have yet to see it come into play in a real situation. And, you know, you've had somebody's boat that's winterized, they got a bucket on the stack and so on and so forth. And, you know, you don't get on the phone and try and get them down there.
Yeah.
You take care of the problem. So it's really a moot point as far as that. If you want to have people maneuver it, fine. But it has nothing to do with, it just doesn't come into play in that. I have personally climbed under flames of a boat, cut lines to get the boat next to it away. I didn't know it was a twin screw gas boat that was on fire. I probably wouldn't have done that. So there's, you know, I think there's better ways of dealing with that. And new in town, but, and have not had a lot of opportunity to, haven't been able to be here much. I'm coming and going a lot and a lot of travel, but.
Well, welcome. We meet here every other Tuesday, 6 p.m. We'll see ya. As you can see, we're having fun.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Chris Ellis. She and her husband were of a lot of assistance to us when we were drafting and amending the code that we have before us, but I think we're going to give up the ghost on this one. But what's your testimony?
Well, my testimony will be a lot shorter. And I thank you very much for slowing down and thinking about it a little bit farther. I just wanted to point out that the requirement of insurance doesn't guarantee that an insurance company is going to pay on any claim. And talking to people here in the state, all over Florida, you know, it's not a guarantee that it's going to do something. In terms of the idea to have a fund set aside to cover potential problems without making any changes to the ordinance or anything else, you could designate 1% of everybody's mortgage into a dedicated fund for that purpose without significantly lowering the harbor revenues, but starting to build up a fund that could be used, especially if it's an interest-bearing account, separate and not used for other purposes. So just FYI, information to throw into the mix.
Good idea. Another good idea. Thank you. Mr. Ellis, you want to say a few words?
I would like to say a word. I'd also like to thank the council for listening to the community and to going back and forth and listening to each other and working through a difficult issue last week or the week before, whenever we were here, and coming up with a reasonable compromise. I'd also like to point out that there is no provision for disposing of boats, no legal way to get rid of a boat. You could designate an area where we could beach boats, could designate an area where boats could be salvaged and then burned, where they could be stripped. You could put it like at the old rail system that is at 6 Mile. It's probably decrepit now, but they used to haul boats there on a rail, just like the boat yard, and did their own maintenance. You could put in a salvage yard with a burn pile. It would be a fairly small area of dedication, and it would open a business for somebody, or it would open a way for the city to dispose of boats without a lot of excess cost to anyone. That's my testimony. Okay,
thank you, Mr. Ellis.
Real briefly, Madam Mayor, I just, again, postponing indefinitely means we're killing it all together, so hopefully that's clear, so we're not delaying it until the next meeting. It's done, kind of, for now. This is what we're saying. And I don't think the maneuverability assessment is a moot point. They probably don't either. I don't think it is a moot point, mainly because you have a finger burning in Reliance. How can you winterize your boat? We're not going to come out. Likely you use your boat in the summertime or something like that. Steve's not going to walk down there and say, "Well, take the 5 gallon bucket off, crank her up, let's go." You know, I mean, most 90% of the people are going to be covered off just by looking at them throughout the year. But for the 10% that we may not see for float houses, because they're becoming more prominent, they should be able to demonstrate that in case of a fire, they can move within a timely manner. I don't care if it's tying off your jet scow and cranking up Lucy Robinson or whatever it is. You should be able to demonstrate that capacity because you'd be on the hook. So, okay.
All right. I don't want to debate the issue. I'm going to close the public hearing.
Sorry.
That's okay. I want to keep everything clean here. All right. We are going to close the public hearing, and I will entertain a motion.
Move to approve ordinance number 1057.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Powell, second by Morrison.
Did I do that wrong?
No, it's okay. We'll discuss it. You're fine. I've already ruled.
There's no second.
Yes, Morrison. She seconded. All right. So, Assembly, you did fine. Assembly, discussing this, the maneuverability, I do like that aspect, but we're kicking it back to the Port Commission. They're not meeting during the summer, so we have a time delay on that. I think this is the right thing to do. It was messy, but it was a public process, and the public, I think, sees very clearly that things we're struggling with, and I like the idea of Assembly Member DeBoard asking for even more input from the public, because it really does make a difference. I learned quite a bit tonight during our first public hearing. So,
vote it down. Since we're at this point, I would just say vote it down.
Okay. Yeah, we could do that. Kills it. It kills it for 6 months.
No, if you vote it down, it goes away. It can come back in it. Yeah, for six months in the same form.
Yeah, but, and it probably won't be in the same form. So I think this takes a little bit more. Okay. So the original idea from Assembly Member Powell was going to postpone indefinitely, but if we vote it down, it kills it. Okay? Any other discussion, questions? Are y'all on board, Assembly? Okay, it's only 8:30. All right, poll vote, please.
Assembly Members Morrison?
Yes.
Yeah, no. How do we have to vote on this?
Austin?
No.
Dalrymple?
No.
Powell?
No.
Ward?
No.
And Mayor Gilbert?
No. All right, Assembly, we're going to recess at 8:33 for 5 minutes. Thank you.
16th, 2024, for the purpose of an executive session to rate the proposals that were received for municipal legal services.
Second. Okay, motion by Powell, second by Morrison. The borough manager?
Yep.
How many responses do we have?
So we have two currently, well, that's including our current municipal services provider, and then we also have another individual that has applied
so far.
We anticipate a few other firms applying. Been kind of in conversations with a lot just throughout our daily work that we do, encouraging folks to apply. We want a competitive pool. We're grateful for the services we have, but this is a goal of the Assembly that 6 months prior to expiration, we'll entertain RFP and try to get a competitive price, but also an experienced professional to take care of our legal needs. I would be curious to know if the Assembly would like a couple folks off the Assembly to maybe make the rating schedule with me, or I haven't done that in the past. There is a blanket rating on what we've done in the past, but I think it may be good to look at interview questions and also how we rate candidates in advance of that executive session. So I don't know how you want to handle that, but RFPs come in on July 12th, so.
Okay. In the past, the last time we did it was we submitted, I think it was my idea, and I thought it was a pretty good one. But we submitted the questions to the competing law firms so that they were prepared to answer them. And there was no surprises. I don't know if the Assembly wants to do that.
We probably still have a copy of those.
We do have a copy of them. I think maybe we could consider it. I like the idea of maybe like more like a situational larger case that, like, how would you respond to these circumstances and provide like a legal kind opinion of, on it, and guidance.
We need to kind of decide because we're talking about scheduling a special meeting and now we're talking about
the place I was going to go to is, do we have any one on the Assembly who would like to volunteer to work with the borough manager on questions on this item?
I'm not going to be here. So.
I'll do it.
I'll be here for the meeting. But
Assembly
not.
Member Powell will meet with the borough manager.
Oh, boy.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Right.
Okay. So
midnight.
any other comments on this motion? All right. Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Audison?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. 13B, Ordinance Number 1058 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending and replacing certain sections of Chapter 2.24, absentee voting, to allow for early voting and electronic voting in the Wrangell Municipal Code.
Move to approve first reading of Ordinance Number 1058 and move to a second reading with a public hearing to be held on July 23rd, 2024.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Morrison, second by Audison. Administrative report. This is new.
I don't want to steal Clerk Lane's thunder, sure. So I'm going to let her speak this one.
So this, there's two parts to this, one of them being to allow a person during the absentee or early voting, it's the same thing, period, the 2 weeks prior to election day, I do that in my office. And when somebody currently votes, they vote an absentee ballot, it goes into a sleeve, it goes into an envelope, and I secure it in the safe at the end of the night. So what I'm proposing, and looking at other municipalities and how they do it, and their procedures and processes and all that stuff, is to actually set up, like, if you will, a precinct in my office. So I would have the ballot box and the tabulator, the scanner, in my office all set up, and when somebody votes their ballot, it'll go directly through the tabulator and it'll keep track on the tabulator. And at the end of the night, I lock my door so it's secure. So I turn the machine off, and when I turn it back on, it just comes, it doesn't have to go through any kind of process. It'll come up with the numbers that have been voted. I can keep track of the ballots by the amount of ballots that have gone through the tabulator, and also the amount of people that signed the voter register, which instead of having them sign an absentee register, they would sign the official voter register that the election workers see on election day. However, I'll have a different highlighter used for when they vote, and that way if somebody forgets that they voted and they go to vote on election day, the election workers will say, oh, actually, it looks like you already voted during absentee voting. So I love that. So there's more, it's more security, and I would say probably 50% of the people that vote with me every year say, when we're done and we seal it up, they say, is that it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it, you know, but they have to put their trust, and I mean, I trust me, I know you trust me, but that I take that ballot and I do what I say I'm going to do with it. This actually sends it through the tabulator, and it's counted. They can see the count. They can see how many people have voted, and I'm just really excited about that. The other part of it is allowing people to vote. Right now, we allow by fax. That's electronic transmission, and when somebody votes by fax, their ballot, they have to, there's an application they have to fill out, there's a voter certification they have to fill out, and then the ballot they fill out and they fax it back to me. And then I take that and it gets processed through the Canvas board. What I'm proposing is to actually allow email as well. Several years ago, it was only allowed in larger municipalities for overseas and
military
services. But there are, I named a few of the municipalities that do it, Petersburg being one, that actually do this. And they do sign, when they do a fax ballot, they sign that they realize that their ballot may not be secure, however, that I will keep it as secure as possible to the extent that their vote can be counted. So those email ballots will be processed the same way that the fax ballots will be processed through the Canvas board. So my hope is that this will prompt people to vote, and so to get more of a voter turnout instead of 300 out of the 1,800 people we have registered to vote. So.
Good. But they wouldn't be able to use text?
No.
Just emails? Yeah.
Just email, yeah. And I did vet this through the attorney. I looked at several different municipalities and their code sections and their processes and their applications and all of that, and so I feel really confident in this, and I'm really excited. But you know, you guys know I always get excited during election time.
Yes. All right. Any questions, comments, Assemblymember Dalrymple?
Kim, I think I asked you the question, but I forgot your answer yesterday. When you email something, are you emailing a ballot? Or are you just saying, I vote for so-and-so in my email?
That's a good question. I email the ballot.
So there is a ballot, and so it's attached to the email.
Yep, And
it's so the official ballot sent by email.
Yep, and so that was a good question when you asked me that. They have to print off their ballot and the voter certification and the application. So the application's first, of course. And then they have to sign the application, send it to me. Then I send them the certification and the ballot. They have to vote their ballot, have the voter certification, which is the same as the process through fax. And then they would just scan it and then email it back to me. And then I would take an official ballot and attach that official ballot to the fax, or excuse me, the email ballot, like I do the fax. And that would go into a separate envelope, separate the voter certification and the application, so that the Canvas board does not see who actually voted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Is this state, local, and federal?
This is just for local.
Okay.
But the state and federal probably have processes that you can do that too.
All right, any other questions? All right, hearing none, poll vote please.
Assembly members Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yeah.
Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes.
Item C, Resolution Number 06-24-1871 of the Assembly of the City and Borough Council, Alaska, amending the FY 2024 budget by transferring $247,625 from the Secure Rural Schools Fund to the Debt Service Fund for Servicing General Obligation Fund bond debt.
Move to approve Resolution Number 06-24-1871.
Second.
Okay, motion by Morrison, second by Otteson.
Really brief housekeeping item that we didn't oversight error in the 24 budget is we didn't actually create the transfer from the Secure Rural Schools Fund to the Debt Service Fund, which we promised voters that would be paying for the debt service related to $3.5 million GO bonds. $3.5 million GO bonds, sorry, Tom Waiter's car is really loud. And so $247,000 is what's being transferred this year in the budget. This is under Appendix 5, also in the debt, or Appendix 3, also under the Debt Service Fund. It'll be $242,000. Principal and interest breakdowns are in your packet.
Right. Any question, Assembly? Okay, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item D, approval of the amended employee handbook.
Move to approve the amended employee handbook as presented.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Otteson. Administrative report, please.
So, again, kind of a housekeeping item. The mayor asked me, why are you doing the handbook? Push that off the side for a little bit because we got a lot going on. The reality is we need to make sure we're at par with the collective bargaining agreement in the very least, and so this is what that does. Because the new collective bargaining agreement for IBEW employees goes into effect July 1st. This will, too. Notable changes is the transition from vacation and sick leave to paid time off, the conversion process for that, the cash out of sick leave. So we put the new cap of 680 in there. Union employees agreed to a 10% cash out or a separate holding account for a year, at which time it will expire and cease to exist, their sick leave. For non-union employees, just based on their inability to bargain, and we had a little bit different deal that had happened for non-union, we made it 25%. So that's part of the personnel regs. The rate of accrual for a PTO is new, same as collective bargaining agreement. You, after so many levels of service, achieve the same rates as the collective bargaining unit provides. We cleaned up the table because it was kind of confusing, 1 to 4 years, 4 to 8 years, or whatever it is. And what we ran into is it at 4 or is it after 4 years of service? Mm-hmm. It gets tricky, so... I don't know when that adjustment happened prior to my tenure as manager, but we're not changing that up. And then, again, new cap 680, step increases for non-union employees, again, to occur on July 1st. Same with the collective bargaining agreement, except non-union employees, step increases are still to happen annually. Union employees in the CBA are every other year. So that's kind of a little bit of a change that we had talked about negotiations. All employees are entitled to a cash out of 80 hours of PTO each year. This helps them cut down the balance so they're not meeting their maximum accrual and losing leave, which happens because we're a lean machine and a lot of people can't take time off because we're always going. And cost of living adjustments will be evaluated in advance of each new year. And applied to non-union positions. Union positions agreed to a 2% each year on the wage and grade table. We did that purposely. Just the processes for union and non-union wage increases, they are different. There's a bargaining process for union employees. There's not for non-union employees. But I think what we felt, is fair to say, as a negotiating team, is the non-unions have been overlooked in the past, and you know, and so this is our way of making them whole, and they don't have the ability to bargain with us, so we're giving them a better shake at the deal over time.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
More changes will happen in the handbook this year, but don't have the luxury of time to do do that now.
Right. And we're working on that conflict of interest code. The one thing I did note, if you just note it, Borough Manager, the 5.79, it refers to 5.53, and I don't believe that's the right reference. It's on page, and I don't want to spend a lot of time, but it's on our page 252.
Okay.
That refers to military leave, and I think it needs to be somewhere else.
Thank you for that. We'll adjust that accordingly.
Yeah, just kind of check on that. Any other comments or questions? Okay, poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members DeBoer?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. All right, and attorney's file is available, and Assembly, we are dismissing, adjourning at 8:54.